Welcome to the Making Jobs podcast, where we talk about car repair, business ownership, and everything in between. I'm your host, Matt Hernandez, founder and owner of Matt's Mobile Mechanics.
And I'm your co-host, Tyler Schultz with Witness Security.
So without further ado, let's get the show on the road. Welcome back, job makers, makers of jobs.
Good morning.
I'm Blaine Fields. Get a listen to Charles. You could listen to Tyler chewing. What was he? Charles chewing.
Can you
chewing.
Hear me chewing?
No. I mean, yeah, sort of.
Sorry.
Hear a little bit of it. It's breakfast time. Hey, so...
Bacon and asparagus. It's amazing.
I'm going to start being better about kind of listening to our previous week's podcast. I don't know if you noticed whenever I pulled up, but I was listening to us from last week.
I actually thought you were on the phone whenever you pulled up. Oh, I was like, wow, okay, who's talking to him this early?
On the phone. He's on the phone. Is he on the phone with me? Is that my voice? No, I used to do that primarily to either correct mistakes from the previous or expound on things that were, you know, like say I said I was going to expound on something but then didn't. So just, you know, a little recap from last week. There's a coffee maker in the background finishing up as soon as I start. There it goes. Anyhow, so a couple things from last week. One, that active self-protection video we were talking about with the airsoft rifle and the kid. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I noticed, and I don't know if anyone else has already seen this video, listened to the podcast, went and watched the video, and I noticed something as well, and I didn't mention it, but you notice... not the officer that actually took the shots, but the second officer who was behind him, came around his shoulder and went to take a shot, but it didn't shoot. In fact, his gun just clicked. It was out of battery. I don't know if anyone noticed. That could have been a bad situation because, and this is a problem with Glocks primarily.
All right, explain the out-of-battery thing.
So out-of-battery meaning that the bolt isn't all the way forward, the bullet is not all the way chambered.
Oh, kind of like Keith whenever we were out hunting.
Yes. Yeah. So in an AR-15, it's common to, if you ride the bolt home, that's the term, riding the bolt home, if you pull back on the lever, the bolt carrier group lever, and then you go forward slowly with it, it won't chamber all the way, especially on a newer rifle where it's got a tight chamber. Now, my AR, it's older, a little bit more worn in. It tends to not do that. The chamber's a little bit more wallered out. My rifle's been around the block a little bit. Keith's is pretty, I mean, it had less than 100 rounds through it before he went hunting, thereabouts.
I was going to say it had probably less than 10 rounds through it.
Yeah, like not even a magazine through it. So, yeah, anyway, so riding the bolt home will do that. The battery, you know, it's out of battery. Well, Glocks do that. They have very tough recoil springs. And that'll happen if you're shooting and you limp wrist it sometimes. The slide doesn't get to cycle all the way back. But then also it'll happen if you go to chamber around and say, you know, in the process of pulling the gun out or something, he accidentally slid the slide back just a little bit. Anyhow, active self-protection, for some reason, John Correa never even mentioned it. They do breakdowns of it. But I did notice that, you know, after the first volley of shots was fired by the first officer, second officer comes around his corner, the guy's still up, and he goes to try and take a shot, because I don't think he had been, the kid had been struck many times, or if at all. It wasn't until the first officer took more shots before he went down. So before he went down, the second officer who went to fire never fired a round, and he tried to. The gun went click. And then he backed up.
And you hear the click.
I can hear the click. I hear the click. And then he never takes remedial actions, meaning, you know, rack a new round in the chamber. He didn't notice it. The officer didn't notice it. So had that been a scenario where the guy still was in the fight and he didn't have a partner there who was able to put rounds down range, he would have been in a situation where he'd been pulling a trigger that wasn't going bang.
That's a hairy situation.
It is. This is why last week I was mentioning that, you know, police officers should be trained in a manner akin to special forces operations and the special forces operators, because what they do is extremely unique and requires a crazy broad skill set. You know, you have to have knowledge of the law. You have to be, you know, in order to be a good police officer, you have to be, you know, involved with the community, have a finger on your pulse. You got to know a lot of stuff and be able to perform at a tactical level as well. So there's a ton of variables going on about that job.
See, that's why...
I'm going to get coffee.
Yeah, let's pause for a second.
Okay.
Because I'm going to get some too, and I don't want a lot of dead air.
Okay, well, then if one of us is getting up and getting coffee, then, I mean, I can still talk. There was that. So there was that instance. And then the only other thing from last week that I didn't really expound upon is you had mentioned a former drug addict who became a Navy SEAL, and I said... you said that was unheard of, and I said that I would make the argument that drug addicts are particularly well equipped to become special forces operators, in certain instances. And I said I would expound on that, and I didn't. So for you job makers out there, here is my expounding. my thought on that, the reasoning I said that is because in... So the mindset of a drug addict, someone who has like an addictive personality, they get addicted to something. And the reality is there's a lot of people who are like that who never end up getting addicted to drugs. But they're addicted to something, you know, whether it be running. Those ultra marathon runners who run like 100 something miles, you can't tell me they're not addicted to something. Obviously it's running, you know, they have some amount of addiction involved in it that drives the people view addiction personalities, you know, and traits of addiction as, you know, always a bad thing. But some people use that in power, you know, and use it to power and drive something else of benefit. For instance, marathon runners like Cameron Haynes, who will go out and he runs a marathon a day. That's 20 something miles a day that he runs. A marathon every single day. He wakes up in the morning and runs for an hour and a half, 2 hours before he goes to work, takes an hour lunch break, runs on his lunch break, and then runs after, you know.
I'd say it's a safe bet that, I mean, even drug addicts, I mean, they get labeled as this bad thing because they have this addiction towards drugs. Well, we also have addictions.
Well, I mean, most people have...
We have the addiction of just liking to have a nice, normal life.
Yeah, or caffeine. Caffeine's a thing.
You know, alcohol.
Everything...
I mean, there's so many things that could be labeled as addictions.
It's just the reality is the vast majority of... Like anything with human beings, it's on a spectrum. Some people are more driven by addictive behaviors than others. And most people have their addictions in control. You know, someone's not going to lose their house over their Starbucks coffee in the morning. You know,
well, I mean, so when I was at college, one of the teachers that I had, his thing was, it takes 23 days to make a habit.
I always heard 21.
Or, yeah, it was 21.
Okay. That's a really weird number, 23.
And so my thought was, as we've been talking about this, no. 21 days doesn't, I mean, yes, or a habit or an addiction to whatever it is that you're trying to.
So that works on a physiological, chemical level.
I got a feeling drugs, that's a different
sort of
level, so, but still, it's still an addiction. If you're getting into God's word and you're reading your Bible,
yeah,
you can use that habit or addiction. The term is still there.
Yeah. So it realistically, say for instance, smoking. You quit smoking for 21 days. You know, you no longer have that nicotine in your system. You're clean for 21 days. Your body's physiological response to that is, you know, at that point, you are no longer chemically addicted. In most cases, you know, physiologically, you're basically broken of that habit, but mentally may not be. You know, someone could not be chemically dependent on nicotine or something for 21 days, after 21 days, but still have that mental thing, you know, that drives them to want a cigarette or something, right?
So the
reasoning that I said that, you know, former drug addicts tend to make great special operators is if they can use that drive.
Mm-hmm.
Then they get, because what happens is a lot of times, and this is in my experience, people who are addicted to hard drugs especially and kick it and stay off of it are usually someone's who will find another thing, a more constructive path to be addicted to. For instance, a Navy SEAL who goes now, and that's what they drive for.
The reason it's unheard of is unless he had had the people in his life that said, you know what, before he got on drugs, he was a good human being. Before he got on drugs, he was great at structure.
Yeah.
So if he can get off the drugs and start driving his life towards more structure,
yeah,
he will be clean for the rest of his life and he will do great things.
And there's a lot of parallels to business ownership as well. You know, a lot of people with the mentality, entrepreneurs who have that type of mentality have a similar, they have a similar mindset as a special forces operator to a degree. There's usually something because when it comes to being motivated beyond the unknown, you know, being motivated by unknown factors to a degree. So let's say you work as an accountant, right? You work as an accountant and you go into an office, you have your boss tells you this is what you need to get done for the week. That's what your motivation is. If you're a business owner, you know, there's a lot of variables and you gotta have a lot of initiative, and a lot of times your goals are kind of unclear. You make up your own goals, right? So you have to be self-motivated. And generally, a lot of entrepreneurs, had they had lived different lives, they could have easily been addicted to hard drugs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I see that in my own actions, for instance, like with archery. Anytime that I pick up a hobby or something, I get nerdy with it. Like I go super in-depth.
No,
right?
Not you.
Yeah. This is why I don't golf. I'm afraid to golf because if I golf, money will just disappear. I won't be, because it is the thing is I know myself and I know how I'll react to it. And I know that I like it. I've been to the driving range and I enjoy it.
That's kind of the way I've gotten with working out lately.
But I'm not going to be satisfied with just buying the cheapest set of clubs. Eventually I'm going to improve my game, and I'll be like, well, you know, equipment doesn't necessarily improve your game, but once I've worked on all the physical aspects of it, I'm going to want to buy a better set of clubs. And then I'm going to need to get the good gloves. And then, you know, I'm going to look at what Tiger Woods is wearing. See how he's, what's going on there, you know.
They probably have, for golfers, they probably have a special type of underwear.
I'm sure.
Socks.
More maximum. Shoes. Yeah. So I'll get nerdy with it to the same way I did with archery. You know, I didn't just go buy a bow and that's that. You know, I bought a bow. I researched, you know, sights, and I've you know, the different broadheads that I wanted, what size, what weight arrow am I going to use?
I think it'd be hilarious if you did go just nerdy with the golfing. I come out there and you're like, hey, you want to go golfing with me? I'm like, not really.
It'd be a problem.
And you're like, well, I'm going to go golfing.
You'd get into it too, and that would be a problem.
No.
I think you would.
I hate golfing.
You said that about fishing, though, too. So, and this thing is with fishing. You know, I'm similarly, like, you know, I can't just go get a fishing rod and start and be fine with just fishing for, like, catfish. I want to master it all. You know, I have, like, 12 fishing rods.
See.
With different combos, different reels, different reel ratios.
I haven't gone crazy with the fishing because I still have not bought anything to do with fishing gear.
Well, you're going to get a boat by next year. Once you have a boat, then, or by this year.
We'll see. You're getting a boat. I hope so, but I don't know.
Once you get a boat, then you're going to be like, well, you know, I don't want to just take it out once a year for hunting. I'm going to go fishing.
If GameStop goes, all bets are up.
Yeah, we're going to have a yacht. I'll be like, how did you get this yacht on this lake? Anyhow, so it'll just be like a 50-foot yacht on Lake Eufaula. We can't go like anywhere because we're stuck. Like we can't get past
especially bridges. Especially as the way low the water is.
We'll just be stuck in a section of the lake because we can't pass under bridge. We'll have to have the yacht built. We'll have it commissioned on the lake. What are you doing this summer? We're commissioning a yacht. We had to build a boatyard in Lake Eufaula. See, it should only be a $1.5 million yacht, but by the time it's all said and done, because we got to build it in the spot, it's roughly around $2.75 million, you know, whatever. But it has a helipad.
Jump change.
Yeah, it has a helipad, so we can, you know, get to it pretty quickly. Anyhow, so there's that addictive personality that that tends to drive. I mean, I would say invariably the majority of entrepreneurs, especially the successful ones, generally have that same, you know, problem. They were basically one life decision away from being a meth addict living on the streets. That's the crazy thing about entrepreneurs is it goes, you know, you look at your life choices and it's like it goes one way or the other. Either mm-hmm. I'm a meth addict living down in my van down by the river, or I'm a successful business owner. There's not a lot of in between, which is why it's not crazy that when they my brother, who is a little bit more connected to the drug world than I am, told me that when they legalized marijuana in Oklahoma for medical purposes, basically all the illegal marijuana drug dealers went away, and they did one of two things, you know, once it was legal, because it became impossible to compete and sell, you know, and no one wanted it. You know, everyone could just go get med cards. So what happened to the marijuana dealers, the guys who were just dealing marijuana? They did one of two things. They either went out and got like real respectable, a lot of them, you know, started selling harder drugs because that's the only thing they could sell. That's what they could do. Or if you think about it, drug dealers are entrepreneurs, you know, as well. And so a lot of them went and became like bank managers. Like, no kidding. Like Brandon said that like it's one of two ways. Either they're starting to sell meth and cocaine and heroin, or they became like bank managers. You know, he said there's this one guy that was crazy. He didn't, you know, it was crazy to him because the guy used to always have dreads. He was a white dude and always had dreads and was like a stoner and constantly, I mean, he was basically Bob Marley except white. And he was like a white Snoop Dogg is what he's saying. And then after the legalization, like
a real bank?
A year or two later, yeah, and he couldn't sell marijuana anymore, and he said he wasn't going to sell the hard drugs, so he went got a job at a bank, and he's a bank manager.
I'm going to assume that he never got caught while selling these hard drugs.
No, or usually
selling the weed.
No, and if you think about it, most, you know, the criminals that get caught are the stupid criminals, you know. So the good, you know, the ones who are entrepreneurs that like have that true entrepreneurial spirit. You know, he never got caught. He just went and got a job at a bank, cut his dreadlocks off, got a job at a bank, now wears a suit every day as a bank manager. So there's a lot of parallels, and it is crazy to think, you know, if you look at, you know, like most business owners are one life decision, were in the past, and their past was, were one life decision away from being a meth dealer.
My question at that point would be, did Brandon just happen to walk into this guy's bank and be like,
no, I think he contacted him to try and buy weed from him or something. And the guy's like, oh, I don't do that anymore. He's like, oh, really? He's like, yeah. When they legalized it, it wasn't profitable anymore for me. So he's like, oh, so what do you do now? And he's like, I'm a bank manager. Yeah. And it wasn't, that's not like the only scenario. Like it.
Give anybody a job, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and that is not like the only scenario. This is all fairly anecdotal evidence, and I'd love to run like a real study where we could find ex-marijuana drug dealers in states where it's been legalized either medically or recreationally. I bet the number would be even higher on the recreational level. So like states like Colorado or, you know, California, if you went there and, you know, went and interviewed a bunch of former marijuana dealers, I bet that a strong majority of them went into business in some capacity I mean, it probably is one way or the other. Either they started selling hard drugs or they became successful business owners, you know, or business owners or business managers or whatever. Generally, they don't just like go get a job at McDonald's. They usually become like management somewhere because they have management skills, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the crazy thing is when you look at it, like as a business owner, as a home security systems company owner, you know, you could either be selling home security systems or drugs. You know, it's kind of,
well, let me segue here real quick. We are no longer just going to be a security and cameras company.
Yeah.
We are now also going to be a, well, actually, if things go the way we're thinking, we will be a PoE, Power Over Ethernet, not PoE.
PoE. PoE. Papa Oscar Echo.
PoE lighting company.
Yeah, I heard about this.
So, I told you?
I heard you mentioned that you were going to be getting into it.
So
I think Shannon was the one who's been pushing it or something.
He has been pushing it. And but this, so last week is when we really started looking into it and diving into it and driving for it.
Mm-hmm.
And as the more we, once we had the Zoom call with one of the largest manufacturers of their product or that type of product, we just, It's definitely going
to
happen.
Which just goes to kind of further exemplify my point that business owners are addicts, you mm-hmm. know, generally. Like, you can't, this is why, like, most business owners, they
addicts,
they
or you could also put it as the aspect of not satisfied.
Right.
Not satisfied with the status quo. And the average person, when it comes to business, you could look at it and go, Are you ever going to be satisfied? No. Why not
right.
try and
so,
go for the next
and
best
that's
thing?
When you're a business owner, this is what I say. Entrepreneurs have a disease. They have a sickness. Like, it's a mental illness is what it is. And there's a fine line between contentment and ambition. So you can be content. Like, say, for instance, you can build a business, like Witness Security. You could build a business. It's doing well. You could just be content. You could just be content and sit back and let the money roll in, right? You could. However, there's always that nagging thought in the back of your mind, well, what happens if the money stops rolling in? We need to get diversified. So there's ambition. Now, you can go too far in either direction of the spectrum. You could never be content and always mm-hmm. have ambition, and then you're going to be Elon Musk, and you're going to say, I'm going to cut my work week down from, you know, 80 hours a week down to 60 hours, you know. And you could be, you know, building a tunneling company and a space exploration company and an electric car company.
From 80 to 60? I thought he cut it from 100 to 80.
Something like that. Maybe he cut back some more. He's really relaxing now that he's, you know, in the 100 billionaires or whatever. And so you might, and you'll get something like Elon Musk where it's nothing but ambition, but he legitimately has, you know, a mild form of autism.
Because he's on that spectrum.
So that trips off the contentment. Like, you get hyper-focused on something, and so that's why he's never satisfied. The guy has billions of dollars, and so he's never satisfied. And that could
they
be...
They say that he could possibly be the first trillionaire because of
public trillionaire. We already have trillionaires.
Yeah. They say that he could be the first one due to the fact that he turned Donald Trump's Twitter account back on.
People forget about Saudi Arabia princes and stuff, prisoners, princes, like people oil, these oil barons. They have really legitimately like trillions of dollars. There are these, you know, desert princes out there that are buying like lifted tanks and stuff that are, you know, it's crazy.
Gabriel Iglesias went to one of those type princes' palaces while he was as a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how there was one time he goes to, I think it's one of those countries. And anyways, they made him sign a waiver flying that to that country that if he gets kidnapped or whatever, the U.S. was not going to get him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was signing it. He's like, I don't know about this. And then whenever he was there, they kept saying things, and Gabriel Slitner going, I don't know if I like this idea. But at the same time, the check was fat.
Yeah.
And then he's walking through the palace, and this prince, he goes, he's like a younger than 20 years old.
Yeah.
And he's walking around. He goes, do you want to he's wanting to give him some of these exotic animals that he's just got as a zoo in his house. And Gabriel's like, thinking, man, he's walking me around this, showing off all of these exotic things. I'm starting to wonder if I'm going to be one of the exotic things.
They live in a different world. You know, when you have trillions of dollars, like money is...
put me in a cage and I'm going to be their standing comedian whenever they want.
Certain rules don't apply to those people for a multitude of reasons. One, not only do they live in countries that laws are a little bit different, but they also live in countries where money tends to make it, you know... make anything go away. Even in America, enough money gets you out of trouble. But so you have this contentment and ambition that you have to balance as a business owner. So you really have to align, you really have to figure out what are your objectives and goals. Like, do you want to be you got to find a healthy objective. Now, for me, when I first got bit by the entrepreneur bug, and I first started, started companies, the drive, my mindset, my objective, I was like, I'm going to have, by the time I'm thinking, by the time I'm in my 30s, I'm going to have at least one multi-million dollar company. I'm going to be making millions, But then I reassessed my goals after a certain point when I started studying the companies that do make millions and what it takes to be the CEO of those companies. I realized that I didn't want that. Could I attain that? Probably. Maybe. It would have been tough. Perhaps I could have. But was I willing to sacrifice? I wasn't willing to sacrifice what it would take to get there. Especially because at the time that I had started companies, I had small children. So that's a big factor that I was like, well, if I had been single, that'd be a different story, or if I was just married and I didn't have kids, that might be a different story. I might could balance enough to where I'm spending 80 hours a week plus building this brand, building this company, whatever it may be, and still have enough time to devote to my wife. But there's no world that I could do that and devote enough time to 5 kids as well. So I kind of reassessed my objectives and I said, I don't need to make millions or hundreds of millions or billions. I need to make enough. I changed my goals from, millions to, it doesn't necessarily need to be a number as much as I want to create generational wealth.
Sure.
And so I set the bar a whole lot lower, which makes, And I adjusted my contentment values, right?
Sure.
So but at the same time, you can get too content and just be like, I'm just going to let this, and then
whatever happens, happens.
Whatever happens, happens type of a deal. And that can be problematic because you could be not paying attention. For instance, especially in your guys' case, you're in the technologies world, right? If you get too content for too long, your business can become a dinosaur so fast.
Oh, yeah.
With the blink of an eye. You could, right now, financially speaking, if your entire staff just stops selling new systems, you could financially pay everybody. You could. Now, I mean, there wouldn't be much need for having sales staff, and you wouldn't need as many technicians, perhaps. So perhaps you would have to cut back your staff. But as far as the owners go, the three of you owners could still take a paycheck if you sat back.
We could manage our customers. Yep. Maybe need to keep one extra secretary.
Right. But what happens in 3 years when the industry changes and
another SimpliSafe pops up?
Yeah, something like that pops up. And then you could, especially because the way your business is built, it's on a no contract sales, you could lose half your customers overnight. It could happen. Not likely to happen, but it could happen. Maybe not even overnight, but over the course of a year, 2 years. Like, if you guys just sat back and decided to be completely content, which, you know, looking on paper, you could be like, well, how much do these people really need? You know, this is fine. You know, the income coming in is enough to set everyone up for life, this generation. Maybe not the next generation, though, but that's right. Another thing. In the So contentment can get dangerous and turn into complacency. That's what you don't want. You don't want contentment to turn into complacency, but you still want contentment. And contentment is something business owners struggle with so bad because they have that, they have this over ambitious ambition drive, this drive of ambition that keeps pushing them further and further. So you have to kind of rein that in a little bit to fit your goals, because what you don't want to do is you don't want to find yourself somewhere halfway in the middle. Right. You don't want to be working the hours of Elon Musk without the bank account of Elon Musk. Right. True.
Yep.
So you got to figure out, okay, where is the happy medium for me?
I'd say me, I'm content where I'm at. But at the same time, I wouldn't say that I'm 100% content. I'm satisfied financially.
Yeah.
Would I be bummed if more money started coming into my account? No, I would not. But financially, I'm stable.
Right.
Financially, I'm content with what's going on in my life.
Right.
But at the same time, if I just were to sit back and rest on my laurels as to what's happened so far, like you said just a few minutes ago, one, our company would be a dinosaur, and it doesn't take any time at all for our company to be a dinosaur.
No.
Two, if we sit back and rest on our laurels, now all those people that I've hired and basically said, I will take care or make sure that you have a job so you can take care of your family, at that point, that's what keeps driving Keith and I and Liette.
I almost wish that I had like a few billion dollars so we could run an experiment, but my guess would be I could predict almost exactly how long it would take for your company to just disappear if you just sat back and fell into complacency. But I'd say 5 years. My guess would be 5 years.
So
the business would survive as it sits for 5 years if nothing new is done. No adapting, no adding clients, nothing. And then after 5 years...
You remember Kyla? So when she left, she told Eric, 3 months and they'll be closed down. And I laughed. Right,
but that was just, that was a completely uneducated, like, snipe is all that was. Because it's so crazy.
It was hilarious to me. And I'm like, where is she getting her figures?
Even me not being in the company, I have more knowledge of how the company operates than she did, obviously. I'm working with a different set of information than she is, because I would never guess. I mean, dude, even if you didn't get a single, like if none of your invoices were paying, the company could survive 3 months paying the bills with no income coming in, you know, or without most of their income coming in. Like even with a kerfuffle with your invoicing system where you basically had like 75% of your customers not paying for a couple of months or whatever.
90%.
Yeah. You're still afloat. Right.
Yep.
So so you have to balance this drive of ambition with, and make sure that your ambition doesn't, drive you crazy. But at the same time, you have to balance contentment and make sure it doesn't turn into complacency.
See, a lot of business owners, and I know that we were, this was definitely a problem for us as well. The average business owner cannot shut business off when they go home.
Right.
They're still thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Myself, when I walk out the door, the average day, when I walk out the door, is business still there in my mind? Yes, 100%. But I turn it off.
There are varying degrees to this sickness. You know, some people have it worse than others. And I think some people are oftentimes in different places. Like, for instance, I was not much unlike your dad, barely 5 years ago, right? Where it was just work all the time.
He jokes about you all the time. He's like, yep, Matt, he's almost 30 years old and he's ready to retire right now.
It's because at some point I kind of looked at and reevaluated my priorities. And like I said, when I was 20, I wanted to build a business to turn millions, you know, to be making millions. But then I realized that I don't need to make millions in order to, it realistically, like I took stock in the things in life that matter to
me. He just wants to make thousands.
You know, hundreds of thousands would be fine. Even tens of thousands would be fine. Whatever pays the bills and affords me the most time to spend doing the things I like to do, which, you know, spend time with my family, go fishing, archery, farming, all these things that I like to do. That's all I'm, that's all we're all trying to do. Everyone's just trying to make money to do the things that they want to do. Some people are just less fortunate than others and aren't in a position to get to spend a lot of their time doing the things that they want to do. They're wage slaves, you know, they're stuck going to work so that way they get a day a week to get to go do whatever. And it may be something as simple as like, I want to, you know.
So with Keith, my dad, we go out into the woods to go camping. He can't relax.
Mm-mm. I think he's part beaver. I think he's got a little bit of beaver in him. You ever see beavers can't relax?
And when we tell him.
He's like a beaver near a rushing stream.
Would you chill out? We are trying to relax. That's what we're here for.
The entire time he's doing nothing but modifying his hammock to make it the best possible night's sleep ever.
And you and I were, could you chill out? You're making me feel like I'm supposed to get up and help. Because you're not relaxing.
I'm telling you, he's part beaver. You ever see?
He goes, I am relaxed. What?
He thinks he is.
And he could be.
He might be. I don't know.
I will agree in some aspects.
I'd like to hook some electrodes up to him and see for sure.
When I'm working on my house, because I don't really have a timeline that I have to get all these projects that I have here at my house. I don't have a timeline.
There are some types of
it's work relaxing
that
to
are
me.
Relaxed. Yeah, like firewood gathering, for instance. I heat my home with a wood-burning stove. That's a chore. I have to cut all of my own wood. I have to split all my own wood. But it's a chore that I kind of enjoy.
Do you chop your own wood?
Mm-hmm. Yep. This year I am, and maybe next year as well. I've got a few years worth of, so the way it works, the way that it's worked out is there's I need firewood for one, and two, there are areas on my land that I need to thin the woods out substantially, and the trees happen to be the size that are firewood size. So instead of, now I have a neighbor, my neighbor's son has a skid steer with a forest mulcher on it, and he could just run through and clear, like it's this big grinder attachment, and it can chew up trees up to 6 to 8 inches in diameter. It's basically like a massive stump grinder attached to the front of a bobcat.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yes, it sounds like a ton of fun. But he could go through and like, I've got a quarter acre swath of land that needs to be cleared. I need to remove 90% of the trees in order to make use of that land. So there are three options. I can either, you know, do a controlled burn, which I don't like. Fire is to me, too uncontrollable. I don't care how controlled you think it is. There's too many variables and it can get out of hand.
You might have a roast pig if you...
Yeah, so there's that. There's also the option of forest mulching. Get a skid steer in there. He could have that quarter acres cleared to nothing but open pasture in a matter of like an hour, 1 hour. Or I can cut down the trees. I can cut them to size and then deal with the stumps later, either get him to run the forest mulcher in it or spend a week with a stump grinder. If I run a forest mulcher, I can't use the wood because it's all wood chips. So I just so happen to have a couple of years worth of wood on my land, and land that needs clearing anyways. Generally, as a, you know, most people's perspective when running a wood burning stove is if you don't have the wood on your property to sustainably feed your fire year round or every year, year in and year out, then you want to harvest from someone else's land. That's the smart move. Unless in my case, you know, in the case of mine, like in the next couple of years, I want this particular pieces of property in my property cleared. Not completely cleared, but mostly cleared. I'm leaving it partially wooded, so I'm thinning it out substantially. So at any rate, that chore, you know, it takes time. Yeah, you know, I got to go out and cut down the trees. I usually cut them and let them fall and stay there to season. So, if I cut them, they're starting to season. They season better when they're cut up to size, but at least I've got full logs down on the woods that are seasoning. Then I'll go out, cut them up to size. And a lot of these trees don't need split because of the size they are, because like I said, it's young growth stuff that I'm trying to clear out. But some of them need split. So, but either way, you know, I go out there, I hook the tractor up to the trailer, I get a, you know, my utility trailer. I go out there with a chainsaw and a couple kids and I start cutting wood down to size because I've already dropped the trees, and then they stack the trailer.
Utility kids stack it.
They stack the trailer.
Saves your back.
Yeah. And then, so I'm just sitting there cutting logs, just cutting, cutting, cutting. Kids come by behind me, pick up the logs, take them, stack them, and then we drive the trailer back up to the front, unload it onto the back porch. The stuff that needs split goes by the log splitter. The stuff that doesn't need split all goes and gets stacked.
You're giving them kids like $10 for helping you, right?
No, I'm giving them room and board
for free.
Yeah, they're room and board. They get to eat.
I had a child the other night. I'm out in the garage cleaning. Reorganizing my tools into my new tool cabinet that was Bob's, my father-in-law, and Marjorie, she comes out. She goes, "Daddy, do you have any chores that I can do for money? Because Mommy says that if I do chores, then I can get some monies." And I was like,
She's at the age where there's a lot of things she can start doing.
I said, "Well, you want to get some money? Go grab a broom and sweep the garage."
Because
there's a lot of sawdust and garbage from leaves and stuff. It was hilarious.
Chores and kids getting paid, like my philosophy is, if it is something that is contributing to the entirety of the family that everyone gets to benefit from, then that should just be, you know, you should be providing that labor for free. However, if there's something that falls kind of outside the scope of that, per se, that not every family member has to contribute per se, like for instance, the firewood, everyone contributes, but everyone also stays warm at night. So, but like if they want to have a side venture, like if they want to make money, I've got to the point where I have, because I have a farm, there's so many chores built into it that realistically, if they want to make money, there's money making opportunities on the farm. Now, in your case, it's not like Marjorie can like buy a pig to make money, right? I mean, your neighbors might get a little weird about a pig, especially you don't even have a fence in your backyard. So it'd be a little weird if you just have a pig just kind of roaming around, milling about in your backyard.
That's why I'm considering getting a chicken coop.
Yeah. So, but, and, you know.
Well, that sounded awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's just really funny to me.
So, you know, but doing that chore. It can be, it's work, but it's relaxing. And it generally to get about 2 ricks of wood or a rick to 2 ricks of wood takes about half a day, you know, to go out, cut it, stack it. And then if I've got to split it, that's more time. And, but it's a day of, and it's not exactly easy work either, you know, bending over, having to cut wood and having to carry logs and stuff like that. It's not the same as going out and turning wrenches for me. So I can understand the like working and relaxing type of a deal, but there is that fine line between contentment and ambition that you have to ride and figure out. Now the reality is, I think it's smart for any business to be diversified.
I think, you know? Keith Wass, his relaxing is when it snows really hard, and he gets to get his snowblower out and go out there in his flip flops and shorts and snow blow his driveway and everybody else's driveway down the street, which is really weird that he'll do it in his shorts and flip-flops. But
I mean, when it snows, which is not common, or it's not super often here in Oklahoma, when it snows bad enough to need to shovel driveways and stuff, I find it enjoyable. I mean, I shovel the sidewalk.
Not me.
I don't mind it. It's like good, honest work. I go out, I'll shovel that. I shovel and salt all of the walkways for my property, my neighbors, and then my neighbors to the south. So two, three properties I'll take care of. Now, the neighbors to the south of me is not as necessary anymore, but there used to be a 77-year-old woman living there. So I made sure that if we had a freeze coming, that the walkways out of her back door and out of her front door to her car and the carport were always salted and cleared, so that way she wasn't slipping on ice. You know, she was 77 years old. So I didn't want her falling and breaking a hip. And she still worked. So she'd still go out. And it, particularly the conditions that would be the most dangerous were the kind that weren't so dangerous to shut down the roads, because then she'd still have to go out and go work. So it's just a habit now. I take care of that
property. I'm very selfish with that one. I hated doing it whenever I was a kid. Dad would be like, all right, let's go shovel the driveway. He'd shovel it five times while we're...
He grew up in Montana, so that's just kind of a thing.
It was bonkers to me. I'm sitting there going, why do we keep shoveling? Why don't we wait till the snow's done dropping?
No, he's gonna shovel the snowflakes as they're falling.
Five different times. Insane.
Not only does he have a snow shovel, but he's got a snowflake catcher. He's just out there catching snowflakes as they're falling.
He'd be out there just, all right, we're going to shovel the entire driveway. 3-4 hours later, all right, let's get back out there and shovel the driveway. I'm going, so, come on, when are we going to quit?
So like I said, I was very similar to Dad, not but maybe 5 years ago, before I was like, okay, I don't mind this pace, but at the same time, we only get so many trips around the sun. You know, and I don't want to be in my 50s still working as hard as your dad. There's nothing wrong with it, I don't think. And if that works for him and that's what makes him happy, that's fine. But for me, I'd rather be, by the time I'm his age, I don't want to be working at all. I want to be, if I'm doing any working, it's in an administrative or logistics role where I can spend 90% of my time doing the things that I love, which is spending time with my family, going fishing, going on hunting trips, those things. And there's a lot of things that I haven't got to do because of work. For instance, I'd love to take an elk hunting trip to Colorado. Wouldn't that be just the bee's freaking knees?
That would be awesome.
You know, but the thing is, that all requires time. And in order to have that type of time, you need to have money so that way you can have the time. And so these are all things that I want to be able to do. And not only do I want to go on an elk hunting trip, I want to go on an archery elk hunting trip. That would be so fun. But I can't do that right now because, one, you know, Colorado is the place to go hunt them. And two, I'm not going to if I go on an elk hunting trip, it's going to be a once a year opportunity. I'm not going out there with a bow to maybe not come
once
home
a year. We're at this point right now. Once a year.
We're once a year just for whitetail. Right. So my point is, even if I organized like an annual trip, I still don't think I'd be, you know, my skills would be good enough to take a bow with me. So you know what I'd love to do? I'd love to be pretty much semi-retired by the time I'm 40. So that way you and I can go take three trips a year out to Colorado to do an elk hunting trip and get to the point where we can go archery elk hunting and take an elk with a compound bow, maybe even go a step further and go with, you know, a longbow or a recurve. You know, get crazy with it. I'd love to do those things, but all of those require time. And that time you can't have if you're still working your tits off in your 50s, you know. And there's a point in time. So elk hunting in Colorado, you're hiking through the Rockies. There's a time clock on that. I probably won't be able to do that when I'm in. In fact, your dad was an eye-opening experience for me when we were out on our whitetail trip this last Thanksgiving. When we're carrying deer back a mile away, and he has to stop every 5-10 minutes because he's run out of the tank in his fuel tank. And he's apologized to me, and I explained to him, like, look, don't, you know, it's not a big deal. For one, you're like half my height, so you're taking twice as many steps as I am. I'm technically walking less than you are. Two, you're shorter than me.
About half your height.
Not quite half, but he's
five,
a full
5'4", and you're 6'5".
I'm not 6'5", I'm 6'1", but he's almost a foot shorter than me. It's a big difference.
So half your height.
Yeah. It's like 3 foot tall. He's a hobbit.
The crazy thing is, I'm from his loins. I don't know how that happened.
It seems that
way. I'm almost six foot.
So I told him, I was like, well, I've got 20 years on you. So obviously I've got a little bit more energy.
He's got 20 years on you.
Well, yeah. But I mean, it's in the youth department. I've got 20 years of youth on him.
You're in the youth department now?
Yeah. So in the department of energy and fatigue, I've got 20 years of youth on him. And then he's shorter than me, so he's carrying more weight. But this was an eye-opening experience because I saw it and I got to thinking when we were carrying that deer back, when it was me and him, and he had to stop so many times, and I'm thinking, this is just Shodo, Oklahoma. And I'm like, I need to go elk hunting. I need to do this. I need to go to Colorado before I'm in my 50s because, and it's not like Keith has been like spending his whole life living slovenly and getting out of shape. You know, it's
no, he, last year he has really turned up the heat when it comes to getting in shape.
But your body at a certain point in time, like it's going to be harder to go elk hunting in the Rockies in your 50s than in your 30s or 40s. So that trip, I got to thinking to myself, I need to make this a reality by the time I'm in my 40s. If I want to get the most out of this, if I want to enjoy it, because I'm not going to enjoy it if I'm dying as I'm walking every 5 minutes.
There's been times that you and I have gone on a hunting trip or a camping trip and you've popped your back out somehow, some which way or another, and I'm sitting there going, crap,
yeah,
I don't have much better of a back, and I'm gonna have to possibly now, throw him on my back and carry him out of here.
Right. Yeah, I think there was one point in time where I tweaked my back and we just got like set up at Goose Island.
He's
and
freaking laying on
and
the
I
ground.
I lay on the ground. Like, I'm like,
I think you're gonna have to carry me out. I'm like, it ain't happening. I'm leaving here.
You might have to carry me. I was thinking, I was like, we're going to have to leave stuff. Like, stuff is going to have to get left because I don't know how I'm going to. But it turned out, like, you know, it was one of those, like, I caught it early enough. Like, I tweaked it a certain way.
He laid back into his hammock and he was like, I'll just lay here for a minute.
Yeah. And I just kind of stretched it out and I was good. But so there's a combination of, you know, one, your physical health, keeping in health. And yeah, you can be active into your 60s, 70s even. You know, like we know a guy in his 70s, he climbs up on roofs, he goes golfing like every other day. And he's a pretty active.
I do look forward to, as a business owner, getting more towards the, and I'm already somewhat there, more of a point and shoot.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you're going to do this, you're going to do this.
Delegation.
You're going to do this.
Yeah.
But at some point, I wouldn't mind not having to do that on the daily.
Right. Which it's...
And having guys that...
A lot of...
All right, you're going to run the jobs for the next 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. You're going to run this for the next 2 weeks, and you're going to run this next 2 weeks.
A lot of business owners are not necessarily passionate about their particular industry, product, or service. Mostly what they're passionate about is running the businesses themselves. The actual act of running the business.
Business is not about product. Business or being a business owner is not about product or whatever you can sell. It's about people.
To me, it's about this. It's an organism, right?
That I mean, your business.
Yeah.
You don't have but you and Rachel.
Your
receptionist. So you've got two people to really take care of in your business.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to your customers, you've got an unknown amount of customers.
Yeah, it's like 1,000 something or another.
So your business is not cars. It is.
Yeah.
That's what you do, but it's people.
And you have to.
In my business, it's not security systems and cameras and hopefully here in the next few weeks,
meeting lighting. It's meeting people's needs.
Taking care of people.
Yeah. Your customers, your employees.
Keith and I have always said, this is a saying that we've said for years. If you take care of people, the people will then turn around and take care of you.
Yeah.
If you don't take care of the people, if you screw up whatever it is that you're supposed to be getting right, then they're going to be a little pissed off.
Yeah. And the reality is
pissed on.
The vast majority of business owners, they may have, you have to have some amount of passion for your product or service. So that way you can actually, you know, take care of people the best.
One of my salesmen, I only got one salesman. He does not have a security system, has not bought one yet. He does not have a camera system.
Mm-hmm.
He is not financially, I don't know if he just doesn't have the funds, whatever. But I don't know how. This speaks volumes to the fact of how well he's doing. But I don't know how he's doing it, but he is turning sales. And Shannon says to him yesterday, I think it was, they're out at a customer's house, and Shannon, or he was talking to Shannon. And he says, he calls Shannon, and he asks Shannon about a specific type of cameras, and the guy, multi-million-dollar home.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy says, I don't really want to pay a $13 fee a month. And Josh is like, well, I mean, there's not really a way. I mean, there, when it comes to cameras, and this is what the guy wanted, he saw the next door neighbor, one of our customers' cameras, and he's like, yeah, I'd like to have cameras. And then he found out it was going to be a monthly. Mm-hmm. And Josh, he doesn't have cameras, so he wasn't able to show him what it could look like on his own phone. And I mean, Shannon
could
log says,
into yours, I could show him.
I know, right? I was like, why haven't you?
I mean, I'm pretty sure I could pull it up on my phone and show your customers and, what your camera systems look like.
Now, I think the alarm.com is what the guy was wanting, because that's what his neighbor has.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, Shannon's like, why don't you pull your cameras up and show him? And he goes, he got real quiet on the phone. He goes, I don't have cameras. Like, because I guess the guy was not too far away. And Shannon's like, what?
Yeah. Well, I mean.
And he goes,
I didn't have cameras.
Sounds like we need to get you some cameras.
I didn't have cameras.
And we have some spare cameras that are alarm.com cameras.
Cats never hooked me up with cameras.
And, we're doing a little bit better now.
Yeah, you are a little bit.
But Shannon, he has like five or six cameras that he had from his last company. He had sitting in his garage. And so he's like, here's some cameras. I'll come over on a weekend on my day off. I will help you set these cameras up so that whenever it comes to a sales appointment, if it helps you get more sales, that means I'm working.
I have to pee really bad, so let's take a break.
Well, we got to call it a day anyways, I think.
Well, we got like 5 minutes.
Okay.
Let me take a break. All right, we're back after the quick pee break and sponsor break. So, anyways, I'm going to segue into, I mean, we talked a good bit about contentment and ambition. We've talked about this before, I know, but it is something to reiterate, especially for anyone who's an aspiring business owner or new in the business world, especially once you first get a business off the ground and things are going well. You get caught up into that ambition mindset and you might could get carried away. So just, you know, take stock in the things that are important to you and what all exactly that means to you. Like, are you know, what's the trade-off? What are you sacrificing? How much time are you sacrificing to obtain your goals? And is it worth it? Sometimes the answer may be yes. You know, you may be in a position where you're like, is it worth working 80 hours a week to meet this goal? If the answer is yes, then work 80 hours a week. Now, if that's the case, and you know, especially if you're young and you're in your 20s and you're like, I want to be done working by the time I'm 40. And if that means working my 20s away, sure. But make sure you're accomplishing those goals because you don't want to trade off all of that time to end up having nothing to show for it in the end. So it's a risk analysis. And every business owner, anyone who's got the entrepreneur bug has this built in, you know, everything's a risk analysis. You're always considering, is it worth taking this step? Is it worth making this business decision? It's a risk to buy all this inventory, but the payoff could be great. You know, we could be taking advantage of a particular supply chain issue. If you're in retail and you say, hey, I'm going to buy up all this stuff while it's cheap and all the prices are going up, but it's a huge risk on my part because I'm going to be fronting a lot of cash, but the payout will be good. It's always a risk analysis. The same to go with time management. Is your business growth worth the hours you're trading into it? And if that's the case, then go for it. If not, take stock in your in your situation and learn where your level of contentment is. Now, don't get complacent and always diversify your business. But a sneak peek into next week, maybe, I think we're going to talk. If I remember right, I'm going to try and remember this, but I think next week we ought to talk a little bit about prepping for the end of the world. So, and this doesn't necessarily mean getting a bunker full of, you know, 1 year supply of, you know, non-perishable foods or whatever. We're going to talk about prepping to your situation's best extent. Like there's various varying positions of abilities to what you can prep for and what you can prepare for when it comes to taking care of your family and maybe even other families. And it varies. And we have two great examples of that, like me with a moderate amount of land, Tyler with less, and hit what can you do in an urban environment? What can you do in a suburban environment? What can you do with rural? And what all things can you start bringing in-house instead of having to rely on someone else for? We can talk a lot about that next week, and I think that's what we ought to do. That'll be a sneak peek, and I'm going to make Tyler remind me if I forget that we ought to talk about preparing for, even if there's not necessarily an end-of-society scenario, but even when everything's going smoothly, just bringing a few operations in-house, you know, producing your own stuff in your own household, and what can you do, what extent can you do with what you've got type of a deal. So until the next time, folks, we will talk at y'all later, and have a fantastic week.